Hey, it's just a few seconds past the hour, Juno, and this is Pat Moore. I'm your host today for Juno Afternoon here on KTOO News. Today, my guest includes Lance Twitchell from the University of Alaska's Alaska Native Language Programs. AmeriCorps is putting on a 5K, one-mile resolution run on Monday, and so we'll hear about that from Hannah Weddle. The Wild and Scenic Film Festival is coming up, and we'll hear folks tell us about the that. It's sponsored by the Alaska Watershed Coalition. Menonhall Glacier Visitor Center has their Friday Fireside Lectures. Jim Carity is going to talk about the bridges of Menonhall River tonight. And Woosh Kanadia is having an open mic and poetry slam. That's December 16th at Silver Bow. They'll be here to tell us about that. Right now, time for National Native News. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Washington State's Ecology Department is taking public comment on proposed water quality standards for toxics, including an updated fish consumption rate. Tribes and conservation groups have concerns. Chris Thomas with Washington News Service reports.
The new standards are based on higher fish consumption rates that are more realistic than the old standards, but that's the only point all sides seem to agree on. Conservation groups and tribes say the Ecology Department has made other calculations that overall don't add up to cleaner water. Chris Wilkie with Puget Sound Keeper says that's a problem when there are health warnings about eating locally caught bass and Chinook from some waterways.
And this is going to result in basically no change to discharge standards. So even though the fish consumption rate is going up 27 times, the discharge limits into the environment are not changing at all. And this is very concerning to us.
In addition to the proposed standards, Governor Inslee is asking the legislature to limit certain types of chemicals used in industry. Wilkie thinks it's a good start, but says the state is sidestepping setting tougher standards for water treatment and what can be discharged into waterways. The EPA is also watching the process and says it could propose federal regulations. One aspect of the new state standards that's been especially controversial is a change in the estimated cancer rate from eating Washington fish. It's jumped from 1 in 1 million to 1 in 100,000. That has so concerned Native American tribes that they're opposing the new standards, says Jim Peters of the Squaxin Island Tribal Council.
We still have a lot of the cancer toxins out there that are going to be either status quo or in some cases even less protective. And so we couldn't deal with that. We couldn't go back to our tribal community and say that was acceptable.
In addition to public health reasons, Peters points out the tribal fishing industry has economic reasons to ensure that its catch isn't contaminated.
That was Chris Thomas reporting. A Native American woman is chosen as Wisconsin's poet laureate for the next 2 years. As Chuck Kornbach of Wisconsin Public Radio reports, her Native background is vital to her work.
Kimberly Blazer is an English professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She says her early years at the White Earth Reservation influenced her perspective of the world and her poetry.
Because a lot of my work deals with the natural world, it does tap into mythic stories from the Anishinaabe people and the kind of sort of spiritual understanding of even language itself.
Blazer reads from one of her poems about harvesting wild rice.
Ricing moon, when polling arms groan like autumn winds through white pine, old rhythms find the hands, bend and pound the rice kernels falling onto wooden ribs, canoe bottoms filling with memories.
Now Blazer hopes to make poetry memorable for more people. She's been chosen as Wisconsin's next poet laureate, a position that doesn't pay much, but will involve traveling the state as a poetry ambassador. Blazer says poetry has a job to do.
Audre Lorde said poetry is not a luxury, and I think poetry is important in helping us balance our self in the world. It has a, you know, spiritual role to play. It can serve us in many ways.
Blazer says some people are uncomfortable hearing or reading poetry, but she says her goal for the next 2 years is to allow more people in Wisconsin to get close to the art by bringing poetry into more public spaces. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, March 14th to the 18th. Information on convention services at ahcnm.org.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes after the hour. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore being your host today for Juneau Afternoon. A couple of quick announcements here. There will be a Juneau Community Commemoration event on Monday in honor of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The event will be held at St. Paul's Catholic Church. There will be a 5-member panel discussion with tributes and vocal performances. Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallett will be there to speak, and the panelists include Bryce Johnson, Naomi Sanders, Rinalda Cadiente Brown, Michael Patterson, and Charles Westmoreland. There's a day of service for gloves and socks drive going on at the same time. So if you are going to the event, bring either gloves or socks and drop them off there. They will go to the Wear and Glory Hole spots. This is a free community event. Everyone is invited. Another thing that's starting on Monday is a very fine program that's sponsored by the state. If you know an older person who is concerned about falling, or if you are an older person who is concerned about falling, the Tai Chi system of exercise has been shown to prevent falls in older adults. So beginning Monday, January 19th, this coming Monday, there will be free Tai Chi classes available in Juneau for anyone who is 60 years old or older. This is thanks to a grant from the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. These classes will be taught by certified instructor Josie Lynn Ferrer and will take place every Monday and Friday morning at 10 a.m. at the Filipino Community Center for 8 weeks. There's a limited number of spaces available in the class, so that those who are interested should call 463-6181. That's Josie Lynn's number, 463-6181, to register. Reducing the risk of falling can help people stay active, maintain their physical health, and prevent future falls. Again, the number is 463-6181 for more information about the upcoming free Tai Chi class for people 60 years and older.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
28 hours, 2 a day for 2 weeks' time, and 15 college-bound students. Believe it or not, but that's a recipe for boat building. The students are all part of Project Grad Kenai Peninsula. Project Grad is a national education model that's been adapted to work in the region. The Kenai Project partners with the Kenai Peninsula School District and 7 area villages to help Alaska Native students graduate and go on to college. During a workshop last summer, the Project Grad students embarked on a special leadership-building task, assembling 3 ocean-faring wooden kayaks. The hitch was that there were no instructions, and the pieces for all 3 boats were piled together. Elizabeth Ukadish is a liaison for Project Grad Kenai Peninsula and worked with the leadership students.
After 2 days of sanding, they realized that their blood, sweat, and tears went into this kayak, and that their ancestors or their family before them spent a lot of time, and it took a lot of pride to get it done.
16-year-old Juliana Anakanak is from Port Graham. She, along with most of the group, says teamwork was one of the best and most challenging parts of it all.
Working together with people for long periods of time. Sometimes it's really annoying because you get tired and you know you have to do it, but still.
The Project Grad students were invited to talk about their work at the annual Elders and Youth Conference held before the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
It's 10 minutes after the hour. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My first two guests are here to tell us about I'm hoping we can get more information than just about the 5K 1 mile run, because they're from AmeriCorps and there's so much going on with AmeriCorps in Juneau. But anyway, my guests are Hannah Weddle and LaTroy Burns, and they're here to tell us particularly about an event that happens on Monday, and this is a 5K 1 mile resolution run. Yeah, what are we resolving?
Resolving. Well, we just figured since it's the beginning of the new year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a chance to keep that resolution that you made. You're providing it. Okay, yeah. Good. All right.
Yeah. So we, since it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day, us as AmeriCorps do a day of service. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to partner up with the Young Parent and Healthy Teen Center and do a charity run for them.
Now, LaTroy, you're the program manager for the Young Teen, and what's
the
name of the
organization? Young Parent Healthy Teen Center. It's a program of Catholic Community Services, okay. Child Care and Family Resource Center.
Okay.
We've been in existence for 20 years. I've been at the position for 8 years now.
I think this may be the first time this has been mentioned, at least during my shift on the station. I hadn't heard of this program. What kinds of services do you offer?
We are basically like a referral center. Mm-hmm. We work with teens from ages 13 on up to 23, 24 years old. We basically give them housing applications. We have we go into all of the schools, the middle schools, for a health fair that we actually have coming up. We teach financial literacy. We teach healthy relationships. We have guys groups. We have guys nights. We do a lot. We have workout club. We like to stay busy. Even working with teens, you got to always keep busy because they get bored fast.
So your target is teens. Is teenagers. This teens of a particular group, or is it just any teenager?
Any teenager.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes it's at-risk kids.
Okay.
But I love all teenagers.
Yeah.
They can all come in and get our services, especially young parents that might not know where to go for certain services like housing or food stamps or things like that. And we kind of walk them through the process of, okay, I'm pregnant, now what? And then we just guide them through the process on that. It's pretty fun. It's pretty fun to walk them through that and see them grow.
And an incredibly valuable service. That's got to be a time in a young teen's life when it seems like the universe is crashing down, and somebody to stand there and say, hey, wait a minute, maybe we can solve some of these problems.
It's a little scary.
Yeah.
Imagine being 17 and like, oh, I have a baby on the way, and there's no services. But there is a service. There's a Young Parent Healthy Teen Center, and they can just walk in anytime, and we can guide them through, hold their hand through the whole process, because I told them, I always tell my parents, doesn't matter if you're 17, 27, 37, you have a life coming into the world, and we got to take it.
So if someone did want to walk in, where would they walk into?
We are actually located right in the same parking lot with Centennial Hall and Bullwinkles,
okay.
Right inside of the Zach Gordon Teen Center.
So you're right at the Zach Gordon.
Right at the Zach Gordon.
Yeah,
yep.
That's excellent placement as well. Okay. So you've teamed up now with AmeriCorps.
Yes.
So here's an interesting combination. How did the partnership come about?
Well, at the Young Parent Healthy Teen Center, they also have a AmeriCorps volunteer through the Jesuit volunteers,
mm-hmm.
Who myself and the six other AmeriCorps that are here know, and we were brainstorming different nonprofit groups who might need any donations, money, support for their programs, and I myself work with AUIC, the Association for Education of Young Children, and so I know about Catholic Community Services, and through that all, we stumbled upon the Young Parent Healthy Teen Center and felt like they were a really good fit for us.
Sounds like a good stumble.
It definitely was.
Okay, so now to the race. This is a 5K 1 mile resolution run. It's I have the billing as TMHS. Where are you starting the event?
It is. It's right if you show up, park at the Thunder Mountain High School parking lot, and we're going to be right in the front area in the foyer. We'll have tables set up inside.
At Thunder Mountain.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
okay.
The start will be right at Thunder Mountain, and we'll be running up the Brotherhood Bridge Trail, halfway point, and turning around and coming right back.
And there's 5K there?
Yep. There's a 5K.
Okay.
So we've marked it all out and ready to go.
All right. So Is there a weather situation that would stop you?
Say
6 feet of snow on Monday.
Yeah, it's a little difficult. Right now we're kind of going against the snow buttons and all of that.
Yeah,
with the rain, it's making
the forecast looks like 40 degrees or something
that.
Yeah,
so,
we're setting record highs here.
Yeah, which is good for us. It makes the trail a lot less icy.
Mm-hmm.
Last time I checked, it's looking pretty good. So if it holds out above freezing, it should be pretty clear.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is there a charge for running?
It's all suggested donation.
Okay.
We have it as a $10 suggested donation. Anything above would be wonderful. We are having a raffle for any of the participants from some generous donations of different businesses around town, which I can think in a second. monetary donations are great, but we're also taking item donations as well in lieu of the suggested donation.
So, LaTroy, some of the money, are you guys splitting some of the cash? Is going
It's going all to the center.
It all goes to the center. So this is obviously in addition to your funding. What's the funding source for your center?
CBJ Block Grant, Medicaid, CCUSA, Catholic Charities USA, from the mentoring program. That's our main sources of funding for my program.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was wondering, about how many teens do you service in over a course of, say, a year?
Over a year.
Do you have a sense?
We service at least, let me go ahead and count my health fair teens as well, because I'm going to count them.
Okay.
We service at least 650 kids a year.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of kids, a lot of work.
So there,
but it's fun.
How many people are involved in your program?
Two. Yeah. A lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of work. But it's good. It's great. It's a great service.
The other person is minding the shop while you're here? The system didn't fall down because you came over.
I asked her to come over, and I was like, I would just hang here.
In case somebody comes through the door.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. So did you find the sponsorship list? Yeah.
On the list.
She was searching through her coat pockets here while we were talking. Yeah.
We went around town, and we want to thank Fred Meyer and Foggy Mountain, The Hangar, Red Dog Saloon, Tracy's King Crab Shack, Imagination Station, Annie Kales, AUIC, and Foodland IGA.
A good collection of local merchants to help out here.
Definitely.
And they're providing...
They're providing prizes for the raffle. Some of the donations are going straight to the center, books, puzzles, things like that.
Yeah. So things you can use in the operation of your service.
Yes.
So this sounds like a really excellent, and I love the fact that it came about because somebody knew somebody else who worked there and like that. It's like the magic that happens. Juneau is that way. And
it's
a wonderful thing because we are such a small community. It's delightful to live in a town where you can't get out of Fred Meyer when you go shopping for at least 45 minutes because of the people you're going to run into and have to say hi to. So this is kind of like that in action to create a 5K 1 mile fun run. So one more time, this thing starts at what time?
Registration starts at 10 o'clock a.m. The race will start at 10:30.
So 10 a.m. at TMHS.
Yes.
Come in your running clothes, and you're going to do a 5K. Now, you say 5K / 1 mile.
Yeah,
is that two separate events?
Two separate events. It'll start at the same time.
Okay. So some people will turn before
earlier,
others.
Yeah.
Okay, right. And then it comes back to TMHS,
and
the folks who are in the actual run are, and I'm assuming you'll take walkers as well.
Yes, walkers, runners.
And you're not going to hold the drawing before the walkers get back, so the runners are the only ones that get prizes, right?
We're going to wait. We'll hold off on the
That's kind of you, Hannah. Okay. Hey, thanks for coming on. Thanks for telling us about the event. It sounds like an exciting partnership between two really excellent organizations.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so
my
much.
Pleasure.
Programming is made possible in part by Juneau's own Alaska Pure Mountain Spring Water, available in Juneau stores or delivered in 5-gallon jugs to homes and offices. 780-4262.
22 minutes after the hour. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next guest is, it's an honor to have him in the studio. I go to his presentations every time he deems to tell us some of his research. Jim Garrity is here. He's talking tonight at the Friday Fireside Lectures up at Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center at 6:30 and 8, right, Jim? I think that's right. Anyway, and the talk tonight is about the bridges of the Mendenhall River.
Yes.
So, for those of us that don't know, I don't think Jim has any time at all to do anything else other than research. This guy digs deep and details the history of Juneau in wonderful, wonderful ways. So, thank you so much for all of that work that you do.
Oh, well, it's certainly my pleasure. I mean, I would do it even if nobody wanted to hear about it.
So tell me a little about the bridges over the Mendenhall.
Well, of course, you know, the Rutherford Bridge is our oldest bridge in Juneau, and in at least in central part of Juneau, oldest major bridge, and so it's 50 years old, and I was there when it was built, and remember when it was brand shiny new, and now it's gone, and so it's being replaced with a bridge and a more modern bridge and wider, and somebody mentioned when they were talking about this new replacement that they thought this was the fourth bridge across the Mendenhall River. And I said, oh, no, it's the 11th. And people, just were outraged that I would even say such a thing. And so I said, well, I'll do my next presentation on
yeah,
the 11 bridges.
Yeah, so much for you, guy. Yeah. I can show you this on paper. Right?
Yeah. So I did that. Right then and there, I decided that my next presentation was going to be on the 11 bridges of Mendenhall River.
So I don't want to give the whole show away, but there could be someone who won't be able to make it tonight. So can you kind of summarize the history of the bridges?
Well, the basic problem with history in the Mendenhall Valley is that until World War II, until the military base was built there, really much of it didn't make the newspapers. So even if you're an avid reader of early Juneau newspapers, a lot of major, major events happened in the Mendenhall Valley, but it was so far from downtown Juneau that it was considered, you know, completely outside of the city area, and so it was often went unreported. And so a lot of major events were unknown, and there's been really no effort to try to put a dateline together for mm-hmm. events in the Mendenhall Valley. So it's and I grew up there, and so it's really interesting to me to see what exactly did happen. Why are those roads where they're at? Why? What is that concrete structure that's out in the brush? You know, why? Why did people move here in Homestead when there was nothing here? You know, so.
Mm-hmm. So the 11 bridges.
Just
when were they and where were they?
Well, most of them are at the two locations that we have now: the Back Loop Bridge. It was a site of four bridges. The Lower Mendenhall River Bridge is the fourth bridge there also. And there were several others in other locations. These are public bridges. This is not, you know, a temporary bridge to get a piece of equipment across or to log off a little bit of land or something like that. These are permanent. They were all intended to be permanent public bridges.
And you're counting the walking bridge that goes on.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And were there other walking bridges?
There was one other walking bridge, and that's covered in the
talk.
Presentation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of sources exist? I understand from what you're saying that basically that it's not in the newspapers. So mm-hmm. so when you go to find this stuff out, what are your sources? Where do you do?
Well, early, of course, the later stuff, you know, after World War II, a lot of that is in the newspapers and books and stuff. But a lot of the earlier things. I talked to people that whose parents were there or grandparents. I look at private photo albums. Different families have. The City Museum has a great deal of historical photographs. The State Historical Library. There's various online, like our own Alaska Vilda. Then there's newspaper accounts. You've got Google Books, which is an excellent research tool for any historian. A lot of really, really rare books that would be hundreds of dollars to purchase. You can read them for free on Google Books.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what, I don't know, maybe you don't know, but what drives somebody to do what you're doing? I mean, this is a hobby kind of thing for you, but it's become your calling almost.
Sure. I think it's just scientific curiosity.
Uh-huh.
You know, I see people sometimes. I was hiking with someone. There was a branch in a dead still valley, a branch that was whipping back and forth. And I saw them look at it and then just turn and walk away. I could no more do that than flap my arms and fly. I absolutely had to know why that was doing that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Why was it doing it?
Well, there was a long, thin pole that was sticking down past it into the creek, and the creek was pulling it downstream and then popping back up and hopping up river and then plunging back in and pulling it down again.
Yeah.
It was leaning up against a small tree, and that small tree was, you know, 30
feet
away.
So this is a real stop and smell the roses activity for you, right?
Yeah.
It's sure. Yeah. Okay.
Sure, and it's interesting to me. It's always interesting to find out something new, you know, so.
So it, because you've kind of become an authority and you're known in the community, do people come to you? You said the idea for this came from somebody conversing with you, but.
Sure, they do.
Are you now a source?
I'm not the only historian here. There's several really excellent historians.
Can you name some of them?
Well, some of them are gone. I mean, everyone knew Bob DeArmond, who was famous. You know, he wrote many books on Alaska's history, and he was an incredible source right up to the day he died. You know, so and you have David Stone, who did a lot of the corporate type mining history.
Mm-hmm.
Just excellent knowledge base. And we're actually in the same Cub Scout troop together. Earl Redman, who's written a book about Juneau mines and miners. There's a number of people here that have really contributed to Juneau's history. My friend Mark Whitman has done numerous presentations here.
Do you have a book? Have you published?
No. It's more fun to research than it is to publish.
Jim, we're going to have to record you or something.
That's what Bob DeArmond told me, too. He pointed a long finger at me and said, it doesn't count if you don't publish.
But you obviously haven't taken it to heart yet.
Well, I've tried, and I just find I have very little talent. I've tried. Hopefully, maybe someday I'll find somebody that we can use some other genre besides writing, or maybe I'll find a partner that wants to do a lot of publishing or something. You know. So.
Huh. Geez, I'm shocked because I know from the presentations that I've attended that you've done that you're broad all the way across from down south of Douglas all the way up to. Well beyond the end of the road. Do you do Southeast Alaska as well? Or?
I have, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yep. And I've done, I did one presentation on President Harding's trip here in 1923.
Yeah, I know.
Basically all over Alaska, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then I've done some mining history ones from all over Alaska.
So. I've been to that. I've heard you speak on that topic as well.
Really, my mentor, if I have one, would be Willette Janes, and who is just dear to me. She was on the board of directors with Trail Mix at the same time I was, and we were supposed to do a historic review of a trail that we were upgrading, and she said if I would help that she would take it on, and I said, well, sure, if you show me what to do. And I was absolutely amazed to find that not only was I repeating rumors that weren't true,
uh-huh.
But the real stories were vastly more fascinating.
Far better than the rumors.
From the rumors,
yeah. Mm-hmm. When I started driving tours a couple of years ago, and you get sheets from people and things like that. You go to events around, like your presentations and like that. And it's amazing how inaccurate what you think you know about an area can be. And then you hear somebody like you talk about one of these things, and it's like, hey, wait a minute, that makes a lot more sense than what I thought had happened there.
Right.
Yeah.
A friend of mine that really loves to get out and take pictures, and he's an excellent photographer. He's sold and published a lot of photographs. Went out hiking last summer and came back, and he came by my house when I was sitting at my desk, and he told me about this huge iron artifact that he'd found out in the woods, and he told me all his theories about why it was there and when it was there, and what it was left there for and everything. And while he was talking, I pulled the file cabinet open next to me and pulled out the original receipt for its purchase in 1910 and handed it to him.
Handed it to him. And he said, oh, by the way.
Yeah, he's absolutely thunderstruck that he had it in his hands.
Oh, that is a great story, Jim. Well, your presentation tonight should be absolutely fascinating, as all of your presentations are. It's the Bridges of Mendenhall River. This is the Friday Fireside Lecture at Mendenhall Glacier Visitors Center. Jim Garrity will be on at 6:30 and then repeat the same program at 8 o'clock as yes. The format for that goes. I would advise people, even though it's been warm for the last several days, that if you're going out to the visitor center tonight, this would be a really good idea to stick your spikies in the car with you, because the road and sidewalks out there never quite clear off. It's always 10 degrees colder at the glacier than it is here.
Yep.
So it's really easy to fall on your way in, and they can't keep enough gravel on that road because it melts right into the ice as soon as it warms up like this. So tricky getting in, but worth every step you take to get there. The fireside lectures are in the theater off to the right of the fireplace, and just do it. To hear Jim talk about Juneau history is to find out the truth about Juneau history, and this man is amazing. I hope I can get there tonight, but I hope everyone else may have a chance to make it too. Jim, thank you so much for coming out, and thank you so much for putting all this great research together that you do.
Well, thank you, and I hope it's interesting to people.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. It's 27 minutes before the hour.
January is National Mentoring Month. Help Big Brothers Big Sisters celebrate mentoring and the powerful effect it has on youth in our community. Be a big and make a difference in the life of a young person in Juneau. Find a big by organizing a presentation by Big Brothers Big Sisters at your organization or workplace. Honor a big by thinking about your own mentors and thanking them. Or sponsor a big by making a financial contribution to Big Brothers Big Sisters. For more information or to get involved, call 586-3350.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 16th of January, 2015. It's the birthday of Mary Carr, born in Groves, Texas, 1955. Had a rough childhood, parents both heavy drinkers, dad worked at an oil refinery. Her mom was an artist who had been married numerous times. But her mom was a voracious reader, about the only real escapism that the small town offered. And as Carr said once in an interview, reading is socially accepted disassociation. You flip a switch and you're not there anymore. It's better than heroin, more effective and cheaper and legal. Mary Carr became a poet who then became famous as a memoirist, wrote her first memoir, The Liar's Club, because she needed the money. It took her 2.5 years because she only worked on it every other weekend when her son was with his father. It was on the New York Times bestseller list for more than a year. She followed it up with 2 more memoirs, Cherry and Lit. It's the birthday of Susan Sontag, New York City, 1933, grew up in Tucson, Los Angeles, went to the University of Chicago, moved to New York, 1959, a single mother with a 7-year-old child, $70, and 2 suitcases, and began to write essays on culture for Partisan Review. One in particular became famous, called Notes on Camp, and Why Camp Should Be Taken Seriously, as a sort of good taste of bad taste. Wrote an essay called Against Interpretation, in which she argued that people should stop trying to analyze and interpret art and just enjoy the experience. It was on this date in 1605, Book 1 of Don Quixote by Miguel de Cervantes was published, about the middle-aged landowner from a village in La Mancha, stays awake at night reading books about chivalry, forgets to eat and sleep, believes the stories are true, and sets off on his skinny horse in a heroic quest to resurrect old-fashioned chivalry and heroism in the modern world. Here's a poem for today by Marie Howe entitled The Game. And on certain nights, maybe once or twice a year, I'd carry the baby down, and all the kids would come, all 9 of us together, and we'd build a town in the basement from boxes and blankets and overturned chairs, and some lived under the pool table or in the bathroom or the boiler room or in the toy cupboard under the stairs, and you could be a man or a woman, a husband or a wife or a child, and we bustled around like a day in the village until one of us turned off the lights, switch by switch, and slowly it became night and the people slept. Our parents were upstairs with company or not fighting, and one of us, it was usually a boy, became the town crier, and he walked around our little sleeping population and told the hours with his voice, and this was the game. 9 o'clock and all is well, he'd say, walking like a constable we must have seen in a movie, and what we called an hour passed. 10 o'clock and all is well, and maybe somebody stirred in her sleep or a grown-up baby cried and was comforted. 11 o'clock and all is well. 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and it went on like that. Through the night, we made up until we could pretend it was morning. The Game, a poem by Marie Howe from What the Living Do, published by Norton, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 20 minutes before the hour. This is Juno Afternoon, Pat Moore, your host. Time now for a little bit of music. Here's Leo Kottke.
is bird note. Safety is everything for birds during breeding season, be it of the eggs, the chicks, and even the mother, so nests must be well hidden. In fact, nests often blend in so well with the background that they're very difficult to see. But do birds deliberately choose materials that camouflage their nests? To find out, a team of biologists from the University of St. Andrews in Scotland studied male zebra finches, tiny Australian songbirds with smoky gray heads, stubby red beaks, orange cheeks, and black and white tails. Peaceful and friendly, they are popular both for research and as pets. The scientists wallpapered the finches' cages with one color of paper. Then, they gave the birds two differently colored materials to build their nests. For the most part, the finches chose to build with materials that matched the walls of their cages. But many of the zebra finches also used small amounts of materials that weren't the same color as the walls. This suggests that the birds may have a second way to hide their nests, disruptive camouflage. The small pieces of nesting material that don't match the wallpaper break up the nest's visual outline, so it is less likely to catch a predator's eye. Safety, it turns out, can sometimes be found in plain sight.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD, and it's easy to share a little of your PFD in Southeast communities through Pick, Click, Give. There are over 36 causes based in the Juneau-Douglas area alone, including KTOO Public Radio. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
In just a few seconds, it'll be a quarter before the hour. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. Pat Moore, your host today. And my next guest is one of the board members of Wush Canadier, which is the organization that... That holds poetry slams in Juneau, among other open mic events and things like that. So welcome, Bill Merck.
Hi, thanks for having me. Appreciate that.
My great pleasure. Chance here to talk about several things. There is a poetry slam tonight.
Yeah, there is. We're having our monthly open mic and poetry slam this evening at Silver Bow, starting at 6, sign-ups at 6.
In the big area off to the side in Silver Bow.
Just off from the kitchen there. It seats 50 people or so, 45 people, 50 people, something like that.
Nice, intimate sort of arrangement. There's a stage sort of deal. There is a stage.
Yeah, we love this venue. Silver Bow is a great place, and they're very supportive and very helpful.
Always good art on the walls, too.
A chance
to kind of expose yourself to culture about three ways there. A little snack and some great poetry.
Wine bar's open. You can get a glass of wine or something and get an appetizer and just sit back and enjoy the evening.
Right. So, and you're co-hosting with Marla Christians.
That's correct. Yeah, Marla and I are going to co-host tonight.
And this is Marla's virgin voyage
Marla's co-host. She's been on the board. She's married to Mike Christensen, who's a local poet, very, very funny guy and a very good poet in his own right. And she's on the board, on the Wush Canadier board. And tonight is her first time up on stage, hosting or co-hosting. So I'm very excited to share the stage with her tonight. I think it'll be great.
Has she presented before at Slant?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, she's worked the merchandise table, and she's a great meter and greeter, and she does everything that's asked of the board. But she stepped up and wanted to participate in a different way this month. And we welcome that. It's all about, you know, pushing yourself and just participating as needed. So.
How large is the board?
Right now I think we have seven or eight members. Mm-hmm. So we just had a couple new folks join, and Christina Apathy is one, and Marla's another. So very exciting.
Christina plays a lot with Perseverance.
She does. She does. She's actually not going to be there this evening. She's in a play about the homelessness situation in Juneau.
Yeah.
So she's on stage tonight, so she won't be able to join us. But
You guys are hosting basically a monthly slam.
Correct.
And then you have some other events that happen throughout the year as well.
Yeah, we do two. We put on two events that are a little more involved than the open mic and poetry slam. In October, we have what's called our Grand Slam, and what happens there is we take the winners of the previous 11 months' slams, put them together, and have them kind of have a word off, a poetry off, however you want to call it. So that the winners,
I like the idea of a word off. That's good. Okay.
So we have the winners, or if we don't have enough winners, or if we have a person who's won multiple times, we'll try and get enough of the winners or runners up, seven, eight people to present. And there's no open mic or anything for that. There's usually just those folks up on stage.
Right.
So we do that in October. That's our fundraiser. That's our main fundraiser. And in April of this last year, we tried something different. We did a showcase over at the Rookery, and we had music, and we had a meal, and the poets were tasked with actually reciting as opposed to reading their work. So that was a little bit different, and that turned out really well.
No script allowed.
No, not really. It was great. It was a real test for him. We had a couple of run-throughs, and J.R. Rosales did the music, and he was great. A few of us got up and did a little bit of kind of improv poetry as kind of a break between the performers. The food was fabulous. The Rookery was a great place to help us out with that. So that was another fundraiser for us. We did that last year. We're going to do that again. I think we're looking for maybe May to do that again. And I don't know any of the particulars at this point. It's still in the planning stage.
Still planning. Yeah. Okay. And the board, you have seven members on the board. What kinds of actions does the board take? I mean, what is the role of the board of Wish Kanadi?
Well, outreach is one. The main thing that we do, obviously, is to pull our resources together to put on these events on a monthly basis. And like any event, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, trying to communicate with the artists, get the word out, find a venue, work with the media, all those particulars. On top of that, we have finances that we need to take care of. Again, outreach into the community, trying to bring more and new people into the event, try and just get a broader and broader appeal across the community.
Do you know how old Wish Kanadi is?
Yeah, we started in 2010.
Okay.
October 2010 was the first event that we put on.
Were there any predecessor organizations?
You know, there were a long time ago, and I hate to date myself, but back with Mike Christensen and I, back in the, I want to say early 90s, there was a group of poets that got together just downtown. We would just sit together. I can't remember where it was now. It was just some place where we got together and read poetry together.
Hmm.
But there wasn't, to my knowledge, there wasn't something like this. I mean, and Wish Kanadi was kind of a, we felt that there was a need for this. And by say we, I wasn't one of the founding members. It was Christy Erickson and a gentleman named Nahan who saw an opportunity to not only bring poets and writers together, but to give members of the community a safe place to come out and speak and share their emotions and just get to know people of like minds. Sometimes you feel a little isolated out there. You come to one of our events and you're immediately family. It's a very warm, warm environment.
I want to explore a little process
here,
if we can. So you're going to present. Will you present tonight?
I'll do a short piece tonight.
You will.
As a break between acts tonight. Yeah.
Okay, but let's go back to when you were going to do it. And I want the predecessor part of that. I want to know what comes before. In other words, do you walk into a poetry slam with an idea? Have you worked? Have you been walking around composing a poem in your head, or do you do it because that's where you are and you suddenly the mic grabs you and you do the thing?
I guess I'd have to ask: Am I going to the event as a board member,
as
an audience member, as a poet, as a competitor?
Yeah.
Usually, and I can only speak for myself, of course, I'm usually working on something all the time, and if I feel that it's time that the poem is ready to be shared, I'll get up there and do that. I've been writing long enough now where I have a little bit of a reserve, and some poems I think are ready, some not so much, some need reworking, so I would like to think that all of us are out there all the time on the streets, at home at night, reading, reworking, trying to come up with something that is going to enrich the venue and enrich the event. People tend to really want to bring their A game to these things. We've had some just outstanding poetry come from people from the ages of 7 to 70. You never know where it's going to come from or what it's going to be. But I think all of us, you're working constantly. And this is a great opportunity to get out there and try it, see if it works, see if it doesn't work. You get immediate feedback, which for me is very helpful. You also have a deadline. You know, we have these events the same time every month, and so you know it's coming.
Both the author's bane and the author's goad.
And you know what? It works.
It's what makes it work.
It works for me. If I didn't have a deadline, it'd be very easy just to push things aside. But knowing that it's coming, knowing that you have this opportunity, and only 16 people a month really get to do this, will only take 8 folks for the open mic and 8 folks for the slam. So, you know, it's a limited amount of slots for people to chime in and do their thing. Sometimes we fill both cards, sometimes we don't. So you never know.
So I guess the other question is, now you've been doing this, you've been a poet most of your life, it sounds like, and you were organizing poetry meetings in the 90s, and now you're part of Ouche Canadien. So if someone comes and basically says, I'm afraid, what do you do? Do you work with that person?
We can. You know, I think the individual, we're going to make the event as welcoming and as warm as we can. And I'm not sure if you've ever been to one of our events, but what we have heard, the feedback we get, is that it's a very safe place. You know, if you don't want to get up and present, that's fine. But if you want to, you've got a room full of people that are in your corner. You know, the events are not about the competition.
Yeah.
The events are about voice. The events are about community. The events are about the word. You know, come do the open mic. You know, you've got 5 minutes to get up, do anything you want. Nobody's going to judge you. It's a chance to get up and get those shakes out of your voice and just get comfortable with being in front of an audience. Not everybody can do that. I would encourage anybody who's thinking about it, you're not so sure you want to do it or not, just come to an event, take it in, feel the warmth, see what the event's all about. You know, like I said, we'll welcome you. We'll welcome anybody to the stage.
And the next opportunity for someone to be able to do that is going to be January 16th at the Silver Bow. The sign-up is at 6 o'clock.
Sign-up is at 6.
If you want to be in the open mic portion of the event.
Yeah, both portions. We'll have 2 sheets out. One sheet will say open mic. One sheet will say slam on it.
Okay.
There'll be 8 slots on each sheet. And whoever walks in the door will start, like I said, at 6 we'll start. And just sign up where you want. And when it's full, it's full.
Okay, and then at 6:30, the lights go down and the stage is lit with a single spot and the audience hushes and the first poet.
They might, you know, and they. Well, we also have, and I haven't mentioned this yet, and I really should. We also have a DJ who helps us, DJ Manu, who works at the Viking all the time.
Okay.
He's been a part of our family from the start. You know, we're really missing something if he's not there at the event, because he really helps with music before the event, during the event. You know, we have a 3-minute dance party that we usually put on here toward the end of the event, and he's there to help with sound effects and really help bring the audience. You know, he's a key piece of the puzzle.
Absolutely.
So at 6:30 the lights will come down. Marla and I will get on. We'll do our introduction. We'll start with the open mic, and we'll just move forward from there.
So January 16th. Tonight,
yes,
at 6 o'clock, the sign-up, 6:30 is the show,
right?
And this is the Ouche Canadien monthly open mic and poetry slam being held at the Silver Bow tonight. Bill Merck and Marcia Christensen will be the co-hosts.
Yeah, Marla.
Marla Christensen, sorry. Mm-hmm. I scribble when I... Okay, and folks, this is a great opportunity to take in an art form and maybe, find yourself up on the stage.
Absolutely.
And the next possibility.
Absolutely.
A little more Leo Kottke here to close out Juno Afternoon.
She's 61 years old and hiding in a school bus, kind of objectionable, with a heart like a fist. Thank you. She stood on a street in Norfolk in a pea coat and a headache, watching the traffic splash by when a four-day cloud in a pickup truck drove her out to the woods, down a gravel lane, down a dirt road, down some dust on the grass to a shadow with some bricks around it. Near a pecan tree, near a boulder, near a dog, near invisible. He doffed his hat and scuffed his heel and puffed real hard on his cheap cigar. He spewed the smoke out in the air and asked her if that was a wig on her head or was it real hair. He laughed real loud and said she was cute. And then he leaned over and said, "Excuse me," and put the cigar out in the dog's face. "I live here," he said. He went inside. She turned around and walked past the dog, back up the dust on the grass, past the pecan tree, back up the dirt road, back up the gravel lane, and back to Norfolk.
The Little Story by Leo Kottke. This is Pat Moore. I've been your host today for Juno Afternoon. Monday, Juno Afternoon will be replaced by Intelligence Squared doing a special on GMO foods.